I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thursday, which means it's time for the front three. This week there's four people, but now Adam Boltwood, unfortunately, who's joining his brother at a party. Of course he is. Joining me, first of all, Chris Hennage, live from America.
Good evening.
Whereabouts are you in New York?
Brooklyn.
Excellent. Hello, Brooklyn. Hello, Florida? Orlando.
Yep, that's where I am.
Orlando, with... What's in Orlando?
Disney World, Islands of Adventure, all sorts of theme parks.
Do you go to many of them?
It's one of those things where it's like you go so much as a kid, and now like there's tourists year round as opposed to seasonally, that there's not really much of a point unless you want to wait in 4-hour lines for something that you've already done about 15 times. So
good point.
Not that much.
Good point. I suppose it's good for a cheesy date, right?
It's really expensive for a date unless you have year passes. So I go much cheaper.
You have a year pass, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, fair enough. Dave, how about you? You ever been to Disneyland?
I've been to Disneyland Paris, but not Disneyland Orlando. I'm waiting for Nico to send over, you know, my flight details that he's paid for, because apparently he's going to get into children's toys on YouTube, I've heard. It's a very lucrative thing. So, yeah, when Nico gets big in children's toys, then he can pay for a flight out there.
I don't know what that's referring to. Is this a joke from the other podcast, Nico, that you're some sort of weirdo who likes kids' toys?
No, we WhatsApp frequently random things, and a little birdie told me that on YouTube the ad revenue for toys channels, toy review channels, is like 30 times normal because kids are much more susceptible to ads. So I told him we need to start making toy review videos.
Yeah, kids are a lot more susceptible to ads, and
so
also at the same time,
we're going to go for it, Lawrence. I'm afraid.
It's one of the few platforms, I think, where they've actually managed to retain some of that ad revenue because no one's dirty within kids' reviews. Welcome to the world of YouTube. Anyway, let's get down to the world of football because the Premier League finishes this weekend and there's been some other great stuff that's been happening. Let's just go over a few wonderful things that have happened over the past week. First of all, Dave, beautifully for Juventus, they've won the Coppa Italia. And... Just like the first year that they won it with Gianluigi Buffon, he still celebrates in such an animated, beautiful way. It's lovely to see.
I think it's what this Juventus team is, has become over the years and years of winning, is they do still really care. The 2-0 win over Lazio. Again, Dani Alves getting on the score sheet, but Sandro being really involved, grabbing two assists, one for Benucci, of course, one for Alves. But I think it shows the want of this squad, the need of to win the trophy. So it's a real interesting one. And congratulations to Juve. A first sort of title, the second title this season, and it's going to be an interesting one coming into the Champions League final and the end of the Serie A table as well, because Roma have pegged them back a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see about that one. I mean, they don't. I mean, Nico, they obviously play great football, but they don't play the most compelling football in the league, do they?
I think depending on the opponent is really where you'll see Juventus' style change, is something that I've touched on before. But something I wanted to highlight, which is sort of the funny thing about this Juventus team, is that just a few days ago, they were beaten by Roma 3-1 in the league. And then when it comes to the cup final, when it comes to what really matters, Allegri seems to get the win, and it's a comfortable win. And it's the same thing that happened with Napoli earlier this season, is that they lost them in the league a few days before, and then a few days later in the cup when it mattered, when they needed to be ruthless and they were going to be knocked out if they weren't, they won again. So Allegri consistently showing this fluid pragmatism, as I've touched on, and really winning when it matters, no matter what.
Maybe more on that one later, and about being ruthless when it matters, as opposed to always being ruthless. And also, if you're always ruthless, does that create the same... Does the effects of being ruthless wear off? Of course, Mbappe and friends also did very well in France, Nico. As most coaches who won something over the past week have experienced, there was a lovely press conference with the soaking and... lots of players looking very happy. People obviously very happy that it wasn't PSG.
Yeah, it's one of those of Emery in the league and how big of a disappointment that was. But at the same time, such a fantastic achievement by Jardim and all his hard work over the past few years, you know, cultivating this team. So many youngsters brought through, so many players from Ligue 2 brought through and really made it into a championship winning team this season. Another thing that's always nice to see is, you know, they were chanting and made up a little song for Jardim in the press conference after they won the title, which is nice to see. It's always nice to see a good relationship between the players and the managers, as opposed to, you know, maybe some sour grapes in between there, despite a league title.
Interesting point. Yeah. Let's also talk a little bit, though. Did anyone else win anything in Europe?
Anderlecht won the title
Germany,
today.
Anderlecht did win the title. That was what we didn't cover, was the beautiful stuff that everyone else has already covered. Time after time after time is Dirk Kuyt's beautiful hat-trick and looking so happy post-game. Did someone say ugh?
Nah, it wouldn't be me, Lawrence. Big fan of Dirk Kuyt.
Dave, why didn't you... You not happy? You can't be happy for someone else for doing something nice?
He played for Liverpool, didn't he, Lawrence, unfortunately? So, you know, wherever he does succeed, it hurts me inside.
That's funny, actually. But I guess he did score quite a few good goals against Manchester United. And there was that.
Yeah, well, he scored one hat-trick, didn't he, Lawrence, against Manchester United? But the amount of games that United beat Liverpool in that time, and that league title as well, where they were so close, Liverpool, the forgotten man once again.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I'm just happy for Dirk Kuyt now, having actually finally won something. He did originally tweet out, and a few Liverpool fans got a little bit upset. I think he originally said, was it a tweet, or maybe he said...
He said best moment in his career.
This is the best moment in his career. I mean, you know, to be fair to him, he didn't win... I think he only won the FA Cup with Liverpool, maybe? Didn't win the Champions League with Liverpool, didn't win the league, obviously, with Liverpool, so... And you know what? When he first came to Feyenoord, it's fair to say, I mean, you know, Dave, Chris, Nico, you all probably know this way better than I do, but it's fair to say that Feyenoord were not in the same position that they find themselves in now. I think quite a few people mocked the move to Feyenoord, thinking that it was in the twilight of his years that he would just go and sort of fade out there. And that's been obviously far from it.
Yeah, I think when he originally got there... people sort of mocked him, not only him for moving, but also, you know, he said something along the lines that in sort of 10 years down the road or a couple of years down the road, he wouldn't be surprised if Feyenoord had been challenging for the title. And people just laughed that off because I think the club weren't in a position where they looked like they were even close. And then now obviously achieving that in his final year, it looks like he's going to retire. He's already announced that. It's just a nice little thing for a player that's, you know, celebrated across a multitude of leagues.
Yeah, I mean, you can't fault Dirk Kuyt for a lot of things. And I, you know what? I think a lot of people focus in on his work rate. I don't think he has a great first touch. But he definitely has a lot of other football smarts. And one of them is about positioning on the pitch. I mean, is there any sort of credit you can give him, Dave?
Minimal, I reckon. Lawrence, works hard. Did all right, sure, under Rafa Benitez. But apart from that, Lawrence, you know, ex-Liverpool, can't praise that. You know, I've got to stick with the Man United propaganda, haven't I? The fans, the listeners, and, you know, Tom, Dick and Harry enjoy on the streets?
I genuinely don't understand who any of those people are. The fans, I don't know if any of those people exist. B, the listener, I know some of those people exist. I have my suspicions some of them are bots. Third, Tom, Dick, or indeed Harry.
He's appealing to the whatever dicks, that I'll means. That.
Yeah, a very good point. Excellent banter from Brooklyn. Shall we move on? We'll move on to the Premier League. And Dave, we might as well start with you because Manchester United Lawrence, are playing.
There's no point. We might as well not talk Dave? About it.
I mean, Dave, you and I had a little chat on the way to play five-a-side earlier.
That was quite interesting, that chat, actually.
Yeah. And we were talking about the way that people seem to spin. Actually, it wasn't on. Mm. It was on the way to a meeting, wasn't it? It was how people seem to spin whatever it is that someone's trying to do. And actually, it's fine what Mourinho is doing.
I think it is. In the first season, if Manchester United win the Europa League, and it's a big if. If they don't win the Europa League, then the season will be classed as a failure, because Mourinho has kind of put all of his eggs in one basket in the, you know, the back end of the season. But again, what we were talking about was the lack of analysis really on Manchester United at the moment. Like, it was too easy for Graeme Souness, especially on Sky Sports, to just say, "Oh, it's simple. You know, Man United have spent all this money and they're playing Tuan Xavier and Marouane Fellaini in central midfield." Marouane Fellaini isn't a central midfielder. You want control in the game. He completed more passes than any other United player. That's a big no-no. That's a big something. That's a massive glaring issue in Man United statistics. If Fellaini is the top passer, but having someone like Tuan Xavier, who's a centre back by trade, arguably would have more time on the ball if he's playing forward from the back and so forth. So the midfield pairing was pretty bad, but it was just that sort of, it's kind of going down the line now that, because United have spent all this money, that the analysis is now quite poor and the production was quite poor. You know, Sky Sports, why are they focusing on this game? Why are they not looking like, okay, United are not focused on this, they're going to go to the Europa League final, how have they done this season? You know, there was a lot that they could have spoke about Manchester United. It feels like the analysis was just cut short, cut simple, and sort of, yeah. Saw Jamie Redknapp look at his watch a few times, like, oh, you know, got to go home now. And it's like, come on, you're in a pretty privileged position there.
I mean, do you also not think, I mean, I see your point there, Dave. Do you also think, this was a pre-agreed schedule. People have thought that United would have been in the mix for something in the league, or that Mourinho would not have given up there. I think people maybe resent Mourinho a little bit at this point for what he seems to have done.
It's weird. It's sort of like that you can feel it's a little bit of a turning point at the moment for Manchester United, where you can kind of feel some fans that previously, you know, called the heads for other managers that sort of start first, and they start these murmurings, and it's kind of like really negative about the club. Like, this, you know, playing away in big games and playing a back six, as we call it. Why are we looking down on that? Some of the best teams in Europe, Juventus, do that. Like, why are we looking down on that? We need to be more positive about what we're doing in these bigger games. Yeah, Mourinho needs to potentially throw another striker up there, give them something on the counter-attack, but it's the right strategy. They're going the right way. If they're going to play pragmatic football, they're going the right way of doing that. But it's just this really weird underlying United fan / the whole of football Twitter wants United to fail because they've spent so much money on Paul Pogba.
Well, I mean, it is also, Dave, you could take the opposite of that and say they have spent a lot of money. You'd argue that if they had have spent that money well, then they'd have a squad they could flesh out properly. Lawrence? And at the same... what's their next spend? I think it's going to be a fairly heavy net spend, I'll put it that way, compared to a few of other sides. And then at the same time, surely people speak about the United way. They also sort of have certain expectations of a high-end tactical manager. And maybe if he's, maybe even more so, if he is going to, if Mourinho is going to play a second string, which arguably Tuan Xavier and Fellaini are, then you'd at least want them to maybe play an attractive style of football, or try and play that style of football.
I think it's kind of the counter of that. Like, if they're not going to play the first team, why are they not playing someone like Scott McTominay, or, you know, looking at someone like Mitchell, who's been very good for the under-23s? It's a real weird one that the rotation that Mourinho did kind of like played Marouane Fellaini that could be playing in the Europa League final. The back four could have been the Europa League final, back four minus, of course, Eric Bailly. It just seems a bit weird. Like, I don't, like, surely, because the game means nothing, United are sitting in sixth position. They can't move up, they can't move down. Why not, like, go, okay, right, today, lads, we're going to play a 3-4-3. Today we're going to play a 4-4-2 diamond. Today we're going to bring the youngsters in. Today we're going to see what this lad can do here, that lad can do there. It just seems like there's a period of experimentation right now. United kind of need that. They need to work on their attacking tactics and how they break teams down. Obviously, we've seen the 15 draws in the Premier League. You know, it's a record since Ferguson, obviously. And it seems like an interesting place United could be, but they are not playing well at all and they're not trying anything, which is a bit peculiar.
It does feel a little bit unusual. Let's go to the games which actually have some sort of bearing on the league at this point. And really, there are only two of those. Just a quick question for you about Manchester United. Technically, this game doesn't really matter, but it is sort of going against what the Premier League set out to achieve, which is obviously to keep the league as competitive for as long as they could, and also to field the strongest squads. Do you think this is going to be looked into, or should be looked into, even considering that Mourinho at one point literally said, "I hope Big Sam goes easy on us"?
No, I don't think it should be looked into. I think if you look at the Premier League's recent history, there's been a variety of clubs at different levels of the table do this kind of thing. Ian Holloway with Blackpool is a good example. Nick McCarthy with Wolves, who essentially tried to game manage situations and chose certain fixtures as a priority and others that weren't. The thing is, I think if you're going to allow, and essentially I'm mirroring a point that Holloway made at the time, if you're going to give these coaches a 25-man squad, you have to allow them to use said 25-man squad in whichever way they want. And I think the second you start to deal disruptive. I think it's disingenuous towards the coaches themselves.
Could you also make a bit of an argument? You could definitely make an argument against that. And you could also say that Mourinho has also acknowledged that he doesn't feel that he has a strong enough squad. And then, then the arguments come the other way, where someone says, well, there has been a lot of money spent here. And, you know, I mean, every Twitter account has made the point that they bought the player of the season who's been injured, I know a lot, Mkhitaryan. You know, they bought Zlatan in, and they brought in Paul Pogba. You know, those are three fairly marquee signings, and they find themselves finishing lower in the table. Although, I mean, you know, I made the point to Dave. I mean, I'm only making the point because, it does sound also a little bit stupid. But, you know, if United go on and win the league next season, or at least compete for it, then Mourinho is the one who had the long-term vision, right?
I think so. I just think that it's one of those things where I can firmly see both sides of it in terms of maintaining competition's integrity and all of that side of it. But I also think, again, you have to give coaches as much freedom as possible if they wish to.
But this is also Mourinho. I mean, Chris, Mourinho is also flexing in a way, isn't he?
A little bit.
He's flexing his muscle. Is he flexing? He's flexing his muscle on the Premier League a little.
A little bit, but then I think he's always been that attack dog in so much as pushing boundaries and going against referees. And not every one of his attacks has been the most subtle. And I would say even not all of his attacks have seemed to have rhyme or reason behind them. I think in this one specifically, there is a little bit of a point, though, in so much as that squad are all deemed Premier League players. The 11 that he chooses, or selection that he chooses, I don't think it's fair for a government body or a league, whichever word's the correct one here, to then stand over it and say, no, this player is better than that player, so you should never play that player. Because you could use that argument and say, well,
but when a coach has said it himself, then you do get into a bit of a weird area, because the coach has clearly said, well, I don't feel this player is the strongest player in this position that I could play.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. He could easily spin around and say, well, I'm giving him a chance to show me that he is. And that's the thing, I think. Because
But then Mourinho did not say that. Mourinho did say the opposite. That's the only difference for me here, is that he's not said that, and he has come out and said and he has come out and sort of indicated the other way.
That's the problem, is that there is such a grey area with this, and also I think there is such interpretation and ambiguity at the same time that means you really can't nail it down in so much as say, well, it's clearly this or it's clearly that.
Yeah. Nico, let's talk a little bit about the weekend's fixtures then. First of all, let's talk about Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal earlier in the week took until the 70th, I think it was the 71st minute that they broke down a side that's been relegated this season. But they got enough of a goal, and then they got enough goals and enough of a good performance to get over the line, and it put them to within touching distance of Liverpool. I can't work out who's had a bad season now.
Between who?
Well, Liverpool or Arsenal?
I think
both.
No, I don't think people are projecting that Liverpool have not achieved as they should, and maybe people have always predicted that Arsenal have not achieved as they should, especially this season either. But I don't necessarily think, looking at the players that they have and looking at the competitions that they've participated in, that they've both of them have done that bad. But at the same time, you know, that result puts the pressure on Liverpool. It's just a matter of whether you think that they can do it on the final day.
Yeah, Klopp famously himself now saying it's not a cup final. I mean, it would be in his interest for it not
but
to
it
be a
is.
Cup final, considering some
I mean,
of
it's
others.
A huge game. It's a game of massive implications.
No,
for
well, no.
Because
yeah, but they're also playing against a side who are not playing for a cup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not literally.
No. Obviously,
it's not an actual
But you
playoff.
And I have discussed this many times, and I think. I know, you know, you've said that the club would be massively off target if they didn't achieve Champions League football for next summer. Not only because of the player recruitment that they wouldn't be able to achieve, you know, bringing players in. I understand Klopp's part of the sell, Philippe Coutinho's part of the sell, Mane's part of the sell. Being part of this side and playing the way that they can and maybe the potential for palpable success is there. But at the same time, without a whole year of even having that possibility in a cup competition, which I think is something that Jurgen Klopp could excel in, you know, that's a massive step backwards. And then who's to say that they will qualify the year, the next year?
I mean, the likelihoods looks like it would diminish to be less if that was the case. However, Liverpool have a game where you'd say, obviously against a side who look fairly hopeless now this season in terms I don't mean in terms of players, I mean in terms of what's been going on at the club. Will this be a sort of a final punch before they go down, though? I mean, can you see that coming from Middlesbrough? If Middlesbrough are to go up against the onslaught that's going to be Liverpool, you know, Liverpool, the problem for them is they almost wanted to play someone like, you know,
a
Spurs or someone like that, yeah. Or a City or someone like that on the last day of the season, just to sort of have an open game, but this
yeah,
will not
I think
be
for as much as the scoreline maybe represented as certain people against West Ham. West Ham were pretty decent before the second goal went in. I mean, they kind of lost it after that, obviously, and the scoreline is a reflection of that. But at the same time, Liverpool still have massive problems in the final third, I think. And had it not been for West Ham completely playing into their hands in terms of from a tactical perspective, I think Liverpool wouldn't have seen the same success, even with the change in formation. And as bad as Borough have been this season, they still have plenty of players that have things to prove, maybe put themselves in a shop window for a club in the Premier League or maybe outside of that. And I don't think any self-respecting player would just want to show up and just lose 6-0. They have something to play for, whether it be palpable or not, you know? And I actually think that this is a game that Liverpool could either lose or draw.
Not win.
They have every potential to win it. They have the players on the team sheet to more than, you know, blow out this Middlesbrough team. But at the same time, tactically, as I've said to you about a million times, I think Klopp's hitting a ceiling. He doesn't really know what to do. The 4-4-2 diamond is fine and great, but the thing that really opened up space for them in the West Ham game was West Ham coming back to their goalkeeper and trying to press them out the back. So as good as the scoreline seemed, it's a result that's not necessarily reflective of them moving on as a side. They still have massive positioning issues in the final third. I think there's an over-reliance on Coutinho to some extent, and I think this is a real threat. It's not a game that's going to be put to bed very easily.
I do find it unusual how much Liverpool possessionally rely on Coutinho, especially considering they do have other players who before were bought to be good on the ball, etc., etc. And how many players before they came to Liverpool looked confident in possession and were able to move the ball well and all these kind of things, and then don't seem to have that same penetration or sort of forward-thinking ideas and weirdly sort of look towards Coutinho very often. Arsenal, on the other hand, are obviously at home to Everton. Now, there is an iteration of this. Let's just cover it really quickly. If Arsenal draw 1-1 and Liverpool lose 2-0 to Middlesbrough, then there will be a playoff, excitingly. There's a long odds, apparently, for that, but it could happen. Chris, obviously, looking at this one, Arsenal, they're peaking at just the right time. You've got to give it to them there. I mean, Ozil and Sanchez could drag them over the line here.
They could. I just find the similarity between Arsenal seasons frightening in terms of the pattern that they tread. And it has, at least for the last few years, always climaxed with a very strong finish in the league. It's something that maybe is mentality. There are possibly other issues in there as well. I just think that what it also does, and I imagine that some Arsenal fans will agree with me on this, it masks the issues a little bit, because in certain ways, I think the last game of the season, it almost dictates the feeling you have in the first few weeks and months of the summer. So if you win and all that, you go, you know what, that's great. It kind of keeps the positivity to a certain level. And I think that strong finish leaves Arsenal fans thinking, okay, that's something to build on next year. We can potentially go higher. It seems like they finally got themselves together and next year we kick on. And unfortunately, instead of being on a roller coaster, I think they're more, on a carousel.
Which one's more exciting, Chris? Which one would you rather be on?
I'd rather be on a roller coaster shooting. I think every fan wants that, really, don't they? I mean, you look at Leicester fans as being the perfect example of that, because you know they won the Premier League, and then I'm not saying they got relegated.
I guess you can remain on a roller coaster too long. Yeah, you can remain on a roller coaster too long, can't you? You like a bit. You want to explore the whole park. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you like the carousel, but sometimes you just want to sit and watch the other people be sick on the roller coaster.
I think going back to football, I think as a fan, I like to see development year on year. Like to see growth of players, like growth of the team, a change of the team, an evolution of the team.
Then you'll enjoy Spurs,
yeah,
Dave.
100%. 6-1.
6-1. They got the result against Leicester City. Hey, Chris, you said they're on a roller coaster. This roller coaster, I think some of these Leicester fans want to get off. Anyway, they managed to stay up. But Dave, what is interesting in this one is obviously Spurs have achieved second now, and yet they went pedal to the metal in this one, and Harry Kane got 4 goals.
Absolutely crazy. You know, putting himself, I think he's now top scorer in the Premier League, the fifth player to score, the fifth different player, sorry, to score 3+ hat-tricks in a single Premier League season. He scored as many Premier League hat-tricks as Ronaldo, Bergkamp, Zola, Diego Costa and Cantona combined, but of course he scored 4 times, which is pretty incredible. And they were all without their main creator in chief, Christian Eriksen, who's this season's been fantastic, the only player to create over 100 chances in the last 2 seasons. In terms of the really interesting stat that's come up today is that Christian Eriksen's covered the highest average distance per game, which is pretty incredible for a playmaker that
is interesting.
You know, is perceived not to put a shift in. But today it was interesting. They went with a 3-4-3. They went with Sissoko at right wing back, which potentially could be the complete fit for Sissoko. If you think about his strengths, very powerful, very good running with the ball at his feet, is athletic, can get forward and defend. Is right wing back the perfect position for him? Chris, that's probably a question for you.
Is right wing back the best position for who? Sorry, I missed that.
Sissoko.
No, because I don't think he's got the what's the word I'm looking for here?
Intelligence.
Kind of the energy for it in terms of he's actually quite lazy. I actually think he's put a little bit of weight on since he got to Spurs. He's looking a little bit thicker, and in general, the problem I have with him at the minute is I think realistically ignore his transfer fee completely, because that's just what it is. You're not going to change that now. He's got uses in very set systems. So one of the reasons that the Didier Deschamps consistently picks him is because he's reliable in terms of he knows what he's going to get with Sissoko. And for me, I think if you can put him at right wing in a team that's going to get counter-attacking opportunities and is going to try and sucker punch its opponent, he's really great at that. And I look at some of the goals or the best moments he had at Newcastle, it was usually with the other team quite high up the pitch. It was very rare that I saw him break through a team or something like that, because he's not that way inclined. Even his debut, actually, was it his debut? I don't think it was, though. I think it might have been his first start against Chelsea, where he scored twice and essentially ran the show. All of his best moments, to my mind, were on the counter-attack. It was catching Ashley Cole in a foot race high up the field and beating him. Scoring the goals was following up on a counter-attack. And then his winner, if I remember right, was a counter-attack as well. So he's got very set uses that he's very good at. He's just not flexible enough for, I think, a team like Tottenham or a team in the top six that needs that from their players.
Yeah, interesting.
Although actually, you just reminded me, Dave makes a good point. Rafa Benitez did play him as a left back, bizarrely.
A left back? Interesting.
I think Benitez sometimes punishes, as he calls them, wankers by playing them out of position consistently. Steven Gerrard, of course, consistently being played on the right wing season upon season at Liverpool. It only happened for one season, and he wasn't a wanker for that long, apparently. Anyway, I think that was a joke. Anyway, let's move on. Is there anything else that can actually happen in the Premier League? Not really. I mean, the sides that are going down are pretty much decided at this point. I mean, it's done, basically, isn't it?
It's over.
And of course, Manchester United can't really go up. When I say can't really, they can't. Spurs can't go down. Man City are not going to get dragged into that. And of course, Watford don't even have Mazzarri anymore. What happened there, eh? Apparently he said that the club didn't take on his winning mentality.
I think he's a coach that that, as good as he is maybe tactically, isn't really going to do a whole lot of good things outside of Italy because of his, I don't know.
Didn't he do a whole lot of good things this season?
I thought he did some decent things, but I think it was he's still relying heavily on a translator, even in training sessions. He kind of refuses to learn the language. But at the same time, I think that's partially down to him realizing that the owners of Watford. The owners of Watford, I don't think there was a whole lot of reasons to move on from Kike Sanchez Flores, and yet they were more than happy to move on from him, and they seem to think that changing the managers is something that they need to do season to season. So maybe it's not entirely his fault.
Can we get past this weird Brexit like rhetoric about it's a disgrace that he didn't learn the language? Absolutely. I think it was John Cross that said he's a disgrace to the league.
I do think it's a little bit. I do.
But he should. Like, he's not going to build. He's not going to build a repertoire with his players by not at least adapting somewhat to the culture. Like, you have to.
But you're presuming he's not speaking English, period. There's every chance, like, Pochettino is doing it on the training field, which I can firmly believe someone like Mazzarri is. The thing is, when you explain football concepts, and I say this as someone whose native language is English, it's difficult to begin with, let alone in a language that you're not even fluent in. Add into the mix that a misspoken word, a word that could be interpreted a lot of different ways that might be simple to someone trying to learn the language, can then be spun in a variety of different ways. Why not speak through someone who speaks both fluently and perhaps even grew up in a house that had both languages being spoken? I just think it's ridiculous to single out that when Watford, Mazzarri, and the way the team's played at times this season has been a much bigger issue than, oh, he's not speaking English on Match of the Day. What a disgrace he is. Genuinely said, a disgrace.
Yeah, I mean,
I give over.
I mean, I think Nico's making a slightly different point too, John Cross, who, let's be very clear, Rafa Benitez would play out of position week after week. But, you know, the point is that actually Watford have reached 40 points this season. I do think that Nico's not an inherently xenophobic person. He does come across that way sometimes. the issue is, I mean, Nico is speaking from a different perspective, maybe. Yeah, I mean, Nico would build a wall if he could.
I would not.
You don't need a wall in Orlando. You just the point is also though that they have actually played some quite nice football this season. You know, I know there's been a dip for Watford, but when he first came over, I think a lot of people also sort of thought he was always going to be fighting an uphill battle because of what was going on at Watford. You also got to admit, I mean, there are going to be a lot of players there that might have a similar approach to him, which is, well, am I even going to be here next season? You know, if we hit 40 points and the club stay up, then they've pretty much done what they need to do this season.
What I will say, I don't disagree with what Chris is saying. I don't want to come across as someone that's saying, oh, you know, he's a disgrace to the league by not learning the language. But at the same time, I think,
I see your point. I mean, if you look at
different managers, like, I understand. Maybe, you know what? Maybe he is trying to learn the language, or maybe he tried. But like, from the people that I've heard, like on the Guardian podcast and stuff like that, like they said that, you know, he hasn't tried. He hasn't done much to do that. Like, if you look at someone like Pep Guardiola, he's learned the language to every league that he's got. He knows like six different languages. So he knows German. He knows Spanish. He knows English. He's tried to learn a multitude of languages so as to best translate his philosophy to his players, because he realizes that that's probably the most important thing to do. And maybe that's why
I think he's on the road to Damascus, though. And, you know, it's fair to say that Matt Sarri is not and was not employed as that manager. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I imagine when they said, you know, there are shades of sort of get rid of the translator. Give me a reassurance. I'll be here next season. Keep the translator. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
You know, I mean, at the same time, it's very clear that he managed to get across enough ideas that they got to 40 points. And there are some managers in the league that didn't manage to get enough ideas. I can read them out if you want. And a fair few of those spoke pretty good English. Apart from David Moyes, of course. Anyway, let's move on. That's the Premier League done for this season. We'll do the season review after the Champions League, because then things would have been able to mold stuff over. But join us for that next week. Now, Dave, before we get into the questions for this week, should we talk very quickly? You read an interesting article on The Independent that said Sky Sports reports and Sky Bets reacts. The unsettling tale of James Rodriguez, non-move to Manchester United. And it was basically the idea of betting and how reporting can change betting patterns and make people unnecessarily gamble.
It's a real interesting one. I think it's a market that potentially, if you do have a sister company like Sky Sports kind of do with Sky Bet, they own 20% of Sky Bet, it's a little bit dodgy. You know, we've heard since the news that James Rodriguez was offered to Manchester United, there's other reports that Man United aren't interested at all in the Colombian. But the odds that you were getting on Sky Bet, you're getting 3-1, and then they froze the market. They suspended the market like the deal was done. And it's quite an interesting one. Do you think it's right is the big question. You know, I think it's a bit dodgy, and surely something, you know, somebody in the Gambling Commission needs to take a real hard look at it to see what's going on, because you know, the article goes on to say to talk about when Ozil was linked to Manchester United, and someone tweeted them saying, "Oi, at Sky Sports News, how much money did at Sky Bet make after you reported Man United wanted Mesut Ozil?" And it's a real interesting one. Is there a real conflict of interest there?
I mean, I agree. I mean, it seems like a fairly open and shut case to me, really. But then betting does always, to me, it does always seem there are elements of racketeering in a lot of elements of betting, surely.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think pushing markets and doing some naughty stuff with the prices does happen to the average Joe. I think that's the problem. It's the average punter that's going to get done here. it's not, you know, it's not going to be a shark in the gambling market. It's not going to be like your 10% that will make profit on from bets and whatever. It's your standard guy that kind of needs a bit of protection. I think it's a little bit immoral for there to be that sort of duality in a market like transfers. I don't mind like bet, you know, football scores, whatever, you know, things that have an outcome that's kind of like more true or false, more one or two. But this is more like speculation and creating a market based on speculation. Like, who the hell sets the odds? Who says it's 3-1? It's kind of like transfer marks used to do this, like, this yeah. really funny transfer percentage. They used to have a great, you know, good laugh about. They were like saying, oh, this is like a 25% chance this is going to happen. It just seemed like, how the hell do you come up with that number? And like, again, there's a market that's created that somebody's pricing that. Who the hell prices that? Mental.
The Squawker office back in the day must have been a laugh a minute.
I'll tell you what, Lawrence,
Well, yeah. Oh, you'll never guess what odds they put on.
All about the numbers banters, mate. That's why we've never fit in.
I mean, it's no, I actually wouldn't. It's also the it's the same I find with there's Forza fan app, which obviously I find interesting. But I've over the past week been able to vote on whether I have confidence in the manager of Real Madrid, the chairman of Real Madrid, and all the other things. So let me, if I go to the Spurs game right now, I can vote to, first of all, I could have voted as to who will win the game. And apparently 7,000 people said that Spurs would win the game. But I can vote on whether I have confidence in the players, whether I have confidence in the manager, and whether I have confidence in the board. I don't know what that means, but I always find those kind of things where I can express an opinion on something I don't really know about or care about pretty funny. Anyway, let's move on to your questions.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My first question is, Chris, how is it to be in the States?
It's good. It's good to have had a good night's rest and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm happy.
Dave, this first one's an interesting one for you. Will Kane win the Golden Boot again?
I think so, yeah. Well, he's in pole position now, right?
I think he's shown.
Yeah, I think he's... Oh, you mean the Golden Boot, the European Golden Boot? Or do they mean the Premier League?
It was just Mateus who said, Will Kane win... He did say, Will Kane win he Golden Boot again. But I mean, you know, interpret
the Premier League, yes. But in Europe, Lionel Messi is top. With 70 points at the moment, 35 goals in La Liga. Bastos is in second position with 31 goals in the Portuguese league. Again, they get the two factor multiplier. Lewandowski, Aubameyang, Kane is quite down the list. In fact, it probably hasn't been updated till tonight. Obviously, now he scored another 4 goals. So he's on 26 goals, so he would jump up to around 8th position. But no, not the European Golden Boot. But yes, I think he'll be the top scorer in the Premier League.
Someone else has been tweeting at Manchester United's debt. The debt is down to $20 million a season, says Martial Arts about Manchester United. Having it isn't good, but it's holding us back. Dave, any opinions on Manchester United's debt?
Well, you go from a club that was the most profitable club in the world, that was one of the, you know, since the Premier League came in, the best run. David Gill did a cracking job in terms of money side of it. Then obviously the Glazers coming in and dropping a load of debt on the club is terrible. You know, it should never have been allowed. To purchase something like that was is pretty ridiculous. And considering how much money we're still paying for the, you know, the debt every single year, it's a bit of a joke and something, you know, the Premier League needs to be stronger in future for stopping this type of thing to happen. But, you know, with the Chinese money going into Birmingham, it's a really interesting thing. Have you seen that? That a lot of Chinese money that's going into Aston Villa, Birmingham, I think West Brom might be owned. Wolves are owned by Chinese investment.
AC Milan now.
AC Milan, Inter Milan. It's just, you know, we need to get a bit of a hold on it. But yeah, the debt, it's reducing, but the debt should never have been there. Unfortunately, it was. So,
I mean,
kind of like the problem.
I'm fairly sceptical of some of the Chinese money coming into the game. I'm fairly sceptical of any money that's coming into the game, to be quite honest with you. But allegedly, there are doubts over whether... I think his name's Lee. I'm just going to call him Lee. Who owns Milan can actually afford to finance the club in the way that the club want to be financed.
He's signed a deal where he's supposed to pay something like 150 million euros a season. And apparently he's borrowed 300 million euros from an American hedge fund to pay for the first two installments, which is like, wait a minute. He just said that he's going to buy the club for X amount of money. Why? Like, surely he should have that cash, or he should have the assets to... I think that's the problem. It's trading on assets. So there's no cash involved in a way. They're borrowing on assets. It just seems like a really weird... You know, it's sort of the world we live in, I suppose. I don't want to complain about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't quite understand how, you know, assets work. But, I mean, you know, if they... why would you go to Milan at this point? It's a shame, you know. I used to be a huge AC Milan fan. What would be best for Iheanacho, and what would be best for Zabaleta? It's as simple as that. Nico, Oli asked that question. Nico,
sorry, you just get out there.
What would be best for Iheanacho, and what would be best for Zabaleta?
I think Iheanacho probably needs to move on. I don't think he necessarily fits into Pep Guardiola's plans, and he would probably fit in really well at Everton, because he's sort of similar to the likes of Lukaku, and if he's going to move on this summer, then they need a new striker or a new man to build their team around anyways. And then I think Zabaleta should retire, honestly. He's getting quite up there in age, and that shows in his play. I don't think he, unless he would be like a backup right back or at somewhere in the Premier League. Maybe. I just don't think he can, you know, the role of fullbacks in the modern game is so demanding that I don't think he could fulfill a starting role consistently to the level that maybe his purchasers would be used to, or at least could see him in the past few years. So I think retirement would probably be the best thing. And I don't want to see him play for another side, really. You know, he's a Manchester City legend, so I want him to stay that way.
Will the first world record transfer fee be broken again this summer? If so, by who and for what player? It's sort of difficult. It's difficult to see anyone spending more money than was spent on Paul Pogba last season, wasn't it, Chris? I mean, there are a few people who've got the potential to move, I suppose. I mean, you know, you could see Antoine Griezmann moving. You could see Donnarumma moving from AC Milan if the right deal comes along, but he's allegedly worth 120 million as a goalkeeper. You can't really see any side spending that.
I would say Mbappe.
You'd spend more than Paul Pogba on 89 million for Mbappe.
If you were forcing me, I would.
What would you spend for what kind of money would you be willing to spend on that sort of luxury?
Sort of like upwards of 100, maybe 110 or something.
Good God. 100 pounds.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, this is the thing. People talk about the Paul Pogba deal and they try and quantify it in value and say, well, you know, he's silly things like, you know, James Milner got more assists or such and such. I don't know if he actually did. I'm just giving an example of the stuff that I've seen tweeted this season. The point is, with someone like Pogba, you're not necessarily buying someone based solely off goals and assists, saying that what you're actually buying is a role player. So you're buying someone that has a certain skill set that you believe you need in your team. Now, whether they turn out to fulfill that and is entirely up for debate. But I think people sometimes misinterpret spending in this case, 89 million for Pogba as, oh, they think they're buying the best player in the world, or they have valued him as the best player in the world. No, I don't think they have. I think they looked at it and said, this is the kind of player we would like in our midfield. How many players fit that brief, firstly, and who is the best of those players? And I think that's what they did with Paul Pogba. And would I have paid that same fee? I don't think I would have. Okay. But then again, I wasn't in Man United's position.
You do not have 89 million, you're right. Luke Dawe says, when will my Ferrero Rocher arrive? Adam's not here. If you could bring any historical figure into the 21st century, who would it be? Charlie Chaplin.
I just John Gaunt of TalkSport. Richard Littlejohn.
Darren Goff.
The UK Independence Party. Yeah. Theresa May.
Yeah. Anyone
just
else?
Just cut out the ones you don't think very good and just go for the best one.
Okay. I'm going to go for the true George. No.
It'd be pretty fun to talk to Alexander the Great.
In a football sense or just in general?
No, not in a football sense. In general, right. I think he conquered most of the known world at that point in time in his life. And for lifespans to be so short at the time, it's just like an interesting person to talk to. Like, he literally conquered most of the world at that point. It would be interesting.
And just such a good second name as well, The Great.
Yeah, I'd love to have a one like that in my lifetime. So
imagine if your name was sort of, you know, Nico The Great.
Imagine we can dream, I guess, right?
Between you and I, I'm sure we could cook up some sort of name. Dave, who would you bring into the 21st century?
I really don't know. Like some sort of someone, you know, like a. My brain's gone, guys. It's over. Nobody. I don't care.
Brilliant. I'd bring Bill Shankly. If it's a footballing figure, I'm pretty sure Dave could go down the route of
Steve Malbronk.
Pretty sure, yeah. I mean, you could go down the route of George Best, maybe.
Oh yeah, Georgie Best. There's loads of managers in there from back in the day. Hector Herrera would be a good one. That'd be fun. Basically, the first Mourinho.
Yes. I mean, Chris, football wise, maybe a David Ginola.
Trying to think.
I mean, you were really sport for
Sir Ralph Ramsey looking for nothing, just to see.
Just to see what he do with Stoke.
Well, he's obviously associated with England's greatest hour, so seeing how that translates to the modern game would be quite interesting.
Would be interesting to see what mentality he instilled in the England squad, wouldn't it?
Definitely.
The problem is all the good ones have died out, really, haven't they? You know, there are a lot of people from that generation, not from that generation, but sort of from the older generation who've lasted. But all the good ones who maybe you would want to bring back are good. Jim Davidson. That's a joke. Will Universe 7 win the Tournament of Power? I'm not quite sure. Is that...
Was that a sentence? I know what those words mean individually, but
will Universe 7 win? Well, yeah, I mean, that is how a sentence is formed. Will Universe 7 win the Tournament of Power? I've got to admit, if I was naming a new tournament, I might now be tempted to call it the Tournament of Power. No reaction. How do you think video referees will be implemented in the Premier League, Dave?
It's going to take time. I think the first one that we've not even mentioned, actually, the diving thing that we spoke about.
You weren't
best
impressed with it, though, were you?
No, I think that's a real... I feel like if you're going back to look at previous games and doing retrospective bans, I understand if it's like violent conduct or, you know, something that's a bit nasty that you want to pick up on. But diving, surely that goes down to the official that's refereeing the game, and surely now we're undermining the referee, the two linesmen and the fourth official. I don't know,
yeah,
what
but
you
he's...
guys...
He's not going to, he might not catch it all. And if we want to eliminate diving out of the game completely, that's fine. Leave it for the cameras out of the, after the game. And then don't ban players, or unless it's like, or maybe don't ban players for diving, but just hit him where it counts, you know, monetary fines and stuff like that for blatant diving or things that we can perceive as diving. That would completely eradicate diving out of the game because players don't want to pay fines. It's as simple as that.
On the flip side of that, we saw Coutinho get hacked in the box a few weeks ago when it was 100% a penalty, and Liverpool didn't get a penalty because he stayed on his feet. Because he was being perceived to be more manly, or he's perceived to not dive.
I'm not sure he did it because he was perceived. I think Coutinho also sort of saw that he was in a great position to put it in the net and then just did not finish.
Poor lad.
I know, right? While we are speaking about the Liverpool team, anyone else seen the new Nivea ad?
No, I have not.
Definitely worth looking at. No joke, it involves a dinosaur's foot and squashing James Milner.
James Milner crushed by monster in bizarre Liverpool Nivea advert with Steven Gerrard.
Chris, have you seen this one?
I haven't.
Right. Okay. Well, it also involves Nathaniel Klein rubbing his body, James Milner spraying whatever under his arms, Firmino rubbing his face, and James Milner apparently appreciating his look in his rearview mirror. It's a weird advert, I'll give you that. Be very interested to hear what people think of it out there. Just let us know. Anyway, let's make a deal. Have United had a better season than the likes of Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal and Man City if they win the Europa League? Dave, yes or no?
Yes, if they win the Europa League.
Good God. Does James Rodriguez suit Manchester United, or is it an unnecessary signing?
Depends what they want to do with the side, I think. I think if they want a number 10 that has got Rodriguez's qualities, more of an attacking midfielder than someone like a second striker like Griezmann, or do they want a playmaker? It's just like this team needs an identity in the final third at the moment. It has inconsistencies.
But then
well.
how do you fit that in with Mkhitaryan as well and all these other players when you want to play more, I guess if you're calling it pragmatic, that's fine. But if you want to really be honest, it's defensive football. So how does he fit in?
Nico, there's nothing wrong with defensive football. Tony Pulis is one.
There's nothing wrong with defensive football, but there is a problem with people consistently calling, oh, well, this manager is a defensive manager, therefore he's pragmatic. Pragmatic isn't defined by defensive. It's defined by
I think Mourinho is pragmatic.
Way to win. He's not pragmatic at all.
He's a manager that counteracts through his whole career. He's counteracted his opposition's strength.
No, he's a defensive manager.
In order to win games of football.
He's a defensive manager.
But in terms of your question about where does he fit these players in, what he's shown this season that's really weird is he's not trusted any of his attacking midfielders. I don't think any of them have played over
1,500
minutes, which is quite an interesting one.
Dave, do you think he has three envelopes with names that are going to disappoint him at the end of the season?
He does. Hopefully, Paul Pogba is not one of those.
Dave, do you really think it's down to trust, or do you think it's literally just that he doesn't favour that way of playing?
I think it's trust. I think that you saw, like, his previous clubs, the attackers used to play every single week, and I think with attackers, you need to play them frequently. They need to be the guy to get that momentum and to get that sort of creativity flowing, they need to have a run of games. And considering, like, you know, you're looking at Anthony Martial's, he's just played it. He's the only one that's been over the 1,500 minutes. Mkhitaryan, 1,348 minutes. Jess Lingard, 1,318 minutes. It's just one of these things where, like, it just seems a bit weird where these players aren't really getting the game time. Also, if you compare his number of minutes, James Rodriguez, with the United wingers, it's quite similar. But James Rodriguez's numbers are like 20 times better. So it's just this weird. I just don't know what Mourinho's been doing with the likes of Anthony Martial this season. Marcus Rashford's got it spot on. Marcus Rashford's managed him perfectly. But Martial, I don't think he's done it well at all.
Okay, you win. No, you win. One person I'm excited to see in the Premier League is Verratti. Can't wait for that signing at Chelsea. That really will be devastatingly good. Just excitement there on my behalf. I think Verratti's a brilliant player. I think Conte will manage him beautifully. Anyone disagree?
He's not going to Italy.
You don't think so?
No, he'll go to Dortmund under Lucien Favre, and they'll win the Champions League. They'll win the treble.
That really German is. Treble. I mean, that is
a sextuple.
That's a twist, isn't it? If ever there was one. I suppose, to be honest, you're probably about as legitimate as any headline out there right now. Favourite goal this season in the Premier League? Emre Can won it and Gary Neville was salty, but, you know.
Emre Can, who turns up once every four games.
Okay, the child of Gary Neville, apparently. It wasn't it.
David Silva's goal against West Ham. It was a really nice build-up of play.
It was a good play, and it was also quite refreshing to see him back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nice.
Chris, what about you? In the Championship?
I would say Chance is the best. Because of the not just the technical execution, but actually the physical requirement as well to change your body and all
just
that
the
kind
thought
of thing.
To do that there as well is just sort of a weird.
Yeah, that's pretty audacious.
Yeah, audacious is a lovely word to describe it. Hey guys, huge fan the A League, unlike the EPL, has playoffs to determine the league winners. This one comes from Ash. Any merit to this format? Well, get rid. I mean, I suppose there is some merit, isn't there? I suppose it does vary things up a little bit, doesn't it? I mean,
I think
Nico, as an American, you've got much more general contact with playoffs.
Yeah, I like how the NBA is structured to some extent, but at the same time, I think football should be. I like the way it's run. Basically, I mean, I like the way that the normal league is structured because it is the best determiner of the most consistent and best team in the league. You know, you have to be switched on from day one. It's the most consistent team across a period of time, not just the best team sort of at the end of the season. While there are merits to both, you know, hitting your stride at the right point, constructing things so that they work out at certain points in time that sort of pander towards a playoff style, I do really appreciate the league format. So in terms of I think league play should still be structured in the way it is, but cup competitions, obviously the playoffs are an exciting thing.
Very good point. There's another question right here for you. Chris, you are nominated for an award, am I right?
I'm part of...
The John McKenzie World Cup of Writers.
Journalist thing.
Yes.
Go yes, on. I've made the group stages.
And what does that mean?
It's just, I think basically what John decided to do was organise and try and work out, in inverted commas, who was the best journalist. And I proceeded to make the 60, I think it was a 64, so he treated like a World Cup, so there was 64 that had to qualify, and I made the top 32 in 12th place. And then I got drawn into a group with James Richardson, Ian Ladyman, and I forget who else.
But you should be getting out of that group, shouldn't you?
Oliver Kay, that's it. So it's myself.
You should definitely be getting out of the group.
I currently sit in second in the group.
You can thank my vote for that, mate.
So yes, wouldn't it be a laugh if I won it though? I mean, admittedly, Miguel Delaney's already said it's a completely farcical tournament, but still, I'd love to win it.
Yeah, I mean, it really isn't about. It's not about that. It's about making it out the group stages.
Yes, that's all I'm after. I don't want to be on the first plane home.
Yeah. I'm going to be so fascinated to see who goes through in that. Do keep us up to date if you want to head and vote for Kristen. I think we've retweeted it on our Twitter timeline. It's called the Biro Door, in the same way as the Ballon d'Or. Do you ever use a Biro, Chris?
I do.
You're not a ballpoint man or?
Purely Biro, otherwise I wouldn't have qualified for this, I think.
Great point. All his articles are written in Biro. Yeah, some of the other journalists don't even use Biro. There are some at The Sun who just write articles in their own shit. I'm pretty sure that's also true.
Jesus.
prove me wrong. Do you know what I mean? If you work at The Sun... sometimes I've got to admit, it does look like you've just smeared shit all over the front of your...
There's newspaper. No evidence to say that they don't.
That's a really good point. I also believe that sometimes they will just not even go to work and sometimes just let the computers make it up. Will Tottenham win the Premier League or European title first. Let's finish on this one for Adam Boltwood's sake. They've been excellent this season and arguably worthy of more than just a lowly 6-1 recognition that we gave them on this show. I would nominate Spurs as the best team in the league this season. Am I right to do so?
Yeah, I think you're right.
No.
Oh. Dave?
I think Chelsea have shown. Obviously, Nico said about consistency over a league season. And unfortunately, Chelsea have shown that defensively they are so good. I think Chelsea are better defensively than Spurs are going forward. And I'd say the Spurs going forward is their big strength. But I say Chelsea's ability to defend and to sit deep and to look for those counter-attacking opportunities is better than Spurs' ability to break teams down, but it has been massively improved this season. What's their best ever points record? There's a crazy stat that's going around as well about their goal difference this season is the same goal difference between 1992 to 2012 combined, which is pretty funny and pretty good. So yeah, Spurs, maybe next season they'll push, but I just can't see them getting over that line and being Premier League champions, unfortunately. Sorry, Adam.
Upsetting, but fine. Should we also just have a quick mention? I mean, Sunderland, we probably won't speak much more about Sunderland this season because they've been dealt somewhat of a crappy hand this season or dealt themselves a crappy hand. Arguably, they were the dealer in the situation and just sort of messed it up. But Chris, someone who definitely deserves a lot of recognition for everything that's been going on this season is Jermaine Defoe. I mean, arguably he'll move on to another Premier League club or another high-end club. But there's been something very nice about the relationship that he's built up with the young Brad Lowry, or Bradley Lowry, as people call him. He's been all over the place with him as a Sunderland player. And there is a lovely relationship he's building up with the young kid.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I had just this second retweeted something from the Pride and North East Awards tonight where the two of them walked down the red carpet.
Yeah.
I think looking at it from two very different perspectives, I think the way Jermaine's handled it and the bond that he's built with the young man is... it's just what I want every footballer to be, if I'm really honest. It's that purely stripping away of everything that maybe you don't like about the game that leaves a bit of a bad taste, and it's just a player and a fan connecting on a very fundamental level. And I think it's just to see the two of them interact, you know how genuine their bond is, and I think how much Jermaine has been touched by Bradley's presence in his life. And I appreciate that really it's the opposite that is the positive in many ways. But I think it's nice that they both kind of gain something from that. And from Bradley, look, I'll be very frank here. He's been dealt one of the shittest hands in life. And we sitting here now are so eternally lucky to be in the position we are in. And it's terribly sad that Bradley won't be with us for longer, because I think his outlook on life, his perspective, and also his parents' perspective, teaches us all a lesson. And I think he's a wonderful young man. And I genuinely think as a representative of football, if you want to be that grand, but also just as a representative of Sunderland, they can be so proud that they can associate that young man with their football club, because I think he's a wonderful little kid. I really do.
Very good point. Well, it's been fantastic to have you guys join us tonight. If you want to go over and see some more of Nico's work, Nico, where can people find you?
Find me on my Twitter at Nico_O'Morales.
Excellent stuff. Dave, what about you?
Find me on my Twitter, Nico_O'Morales.
And Kristen?
At the front three.
Excellent work. Well, you can join us on probably Monday, I think it is, as we review the final weekend. Who's going to finish in the top four? Who's going to finish outside the top four? That's really what the final weekend comes down to. And that is probably one of the most compelling races of the season that we've seen. It wasn't maybe the most exciting of title races, but it certainly has been a season where things have changed a little bit. We'll do more summary next week. It's going to be fascinating to talk that through with all you guys, including Adam Boltwood. it's been good to have you. If you are in the New York area, be careful. Kristen's there. But if you do have any recommendations for stuff he can do, of course, send him over there. It'd be fantastic. Chris, are you seeing any MLS games?
I think I am going to New York Red Bulls, New England next week. But other than that, it's just a brief stop this time.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, he's on his way back very soon. But if you see him on the street, stop him. Let him know how much you enjoy his journalism, even if he didn't win the Biro d'Or. It's been good to have you guys tonight. And we'll see you again real soon right here on The Front Three.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.